Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. It is a tough time to be in the local news business. Local newspapers have been going out of business at a steady rate for years, and those that have survived have struggled to make it. The new documentary, Storm Lake, shows how the Storm Lake Times and the family team behind it work incredibly hard to connect with and cover their community and to stay solvent while doing it. The Storm Lake Times publishes twice a week. Art Cullen is the editor, and he co-owns the paper with his brother, John. His wife, Dolores, is a photographer and features reporter, and his son, Tom, is also a reporter. The paper has a circulation of 3,000, and it's community journalism at its finest. They cover the small stuff, and they are not afraid to cover the big stuff or take on controversial issues. Remember when the Des Moines Waterworks sued Buena Vista, Calhoun, and Sac counties over nitrate pollution of the Raccoon River? The Storm Lake Times covered that story, all sides of it, and uncovered the source of secret funding, corporate agricultural money that was paying millions of dollars of legal bills on behalf of those counties. In 2017, Cullen won the Pulitzer Prize for a series of editorials that laid bare what was going on behind the scenes and helped readers understand Iowa's water issues and the politics surrounding them. This film profiles life at the Storm Lake Times after the Pulitzer and culminates in the early months of the pandemic. The award-winning filmmakers behind it are here with me now, Jerry Recious and Beth Levison. In recent weeks, they have traveled around Iowa attending premieres of the film. You can stream it at home through the Varsity Theater in Des Moines through October 28th. It is airing in Holstein October 22nd through the 25th, and it will air on Iowa PBS and PBS stations nationwide on November 15th. Hello, Jerry.
Hello, Charity. Great to be here.
And hello, Beth.
Hi, Charity. I'm also really happy to be here.
Well, thank you both so much for being here. And Jerry, I'll let you start. How did what was going on at the Storm Lake Times really come to your attention?
I was born in Iowa. I'm a native Iowan, and I pay attention to all things Iowan. I'm still in love with my state, and I come back often to visit. And you know, when things happen here, I'm always paying attention. I'm also a news junkie. So when the Pulitzers were being announced, as they are every year, I always pay attention. And in the spring of 2017, I saw the headline for the Pulitzer announcement was "Small North Iowa Newspaper Wins Pulitzer Prize." And I literally did a double take and read it over again and then started looking up the Storm Lake Times, Art Cullen, and I reread his articles, and then after a week or so of thinking about it, I called him up and I asked if he would be interested in having a documentary film made about him and the team, or just having a cameraman around for a day just to see if I could build a character reel in order to pitch the film, which he agreed to. So later that summer, I went out and spent an afternoon with him. And really fell in stride with him and fell in love with what he was doing, with, you know, the work they were doing. You know, one of the scenes in the final film is actually from that, which I always say was the real clinch point for me. When we were going through town, he was delivering his newspapers. So he, you know, writes these amazing articles and lays out the design for the paper, you know, twice a week. And then at the end of every Wednesday, I guess Tuesdays and Thursdays, then he brings the papers out to the different locations where they're for sale. And we had gone, I think, to two or three different places. And the last place we went to was a small cafe. And he said, as we were parking in the parking lot, said, "Look, you know, don't even bother coming in. It's only 10 newspapers. You don't need to see, you know, this. You can just relax in the car." And I said, "You know what? I'm going to come in and just see what happens." So I filmed him going in. And we got in, and that's where he reaches inside this styrofoam honor cup and pulls out 7 single dollar bills and then plops 10 new papers down and takes the 3 that weren't sold home. And I thought, man, you know, he's writing Pulitzer Prize winning material, laying out the newspaper, and then he's bringing single dollar bills home to make his monthlies. And I thought, this is really an amazing story.
Beth, how did you get engaged in the project?
Yeah, so Jerry and I teach together at the School of Visual Arts in New York City. We had always wanted to work together. He teaches cinematography and I teach producing in the MFA program. And I think Jerry had come back, and maybe it was a couple months later, and he had been trying to get the project off the ground, and he had reached out to me, but I was just sort of busy, to be honest, on some other projects. Not disinterested, just busy. And then, you know, it's really interesting that both of us came to this story through newspaper articles, really. So it must have been the summer of 2018, Jerry reached out to me, and I had given his real look once before, and he said, you know, I know you looked at the materials, but there's a piece about Art Cullen, or by Art Cullen, in the New York Times today. Did you happen to see it? And so I just totally remember this day where I opened up my laptop on my kitchen counter and I went to the New York Times online and read this editorial, and I just thought it was incredible. It was just a voice that I hadn't really heard before and powerful, and it made me cry. And I went and I rewatched Jerry's 6-minute little reel and I said, let's talk. And then really within a month to 6 weeks, we were partnered up and moving the movie forward.
Now, of course, there are small town newspapers all over the country, and the Cullen family is an extraordinary family and they're doing incredible work. And of course, Art Cullen is an incredible writer and won the Pulitzer Prize for that. But what was it about following this small town newspaper through just about a year in the life that made you think, people need to see this? Jerry, why do people need to see this?
You know, we started out knowing that Art was a great writer, obviously had won a Pulitzer for that. And we knew that there was a story there, but we really, you know, it took the process of actually going out over the course of almost 2 years, a year and a half or so, more of production, to understand that it was a real ensemble piece. I mean, I think the different trips that we made out over the seasons and simply coming back into Storm Lake on a regular basis gave us that insight of the storylines that, you know, were kind of baked into a community, meaning that there was big ag, labor, immigration, you know, small community stories as well. So there were so many things that we knew that were part of what they did every single day. So, you know, we just kept on going back and realized that there was a lot there, not just a small town newspaper, but actually, you know, something that was connecting to all the issues that we're talking about in America.
Right. I was just going to say, this is all with the backdrop, of course, President Trump. This is with the backdrop of immigration, arguments over immigration and so many deportations going on. And Storm Lake is an incredibly diverse community that has many immigrants. And yes, some of them are undocumented. So immigration is a very present issue in that community for all members of the community. So, I mean, in some ways, Beth, did this feel like a microcosm? You know, we've got these huge issues going on in the national eye, and in Storm Lake, you see them play out in real life, in real people's lives every day.
Absolutely. I think that's what really, that was the light bulb moment for us, when we realized that this story is a microcosm of themes and conflicts and things just playing out all across the country. And here they were playing out in such an intimate way and in such a small scale way where you could almost see it, you know, when and smell it. You know, in the movie, there's this moment where Dolores talks about, you know, going to another town and it's smelling her, just putrid is her word. And someone in the community says, well, that's, you know, the smell of corn drying. And she says to us, that's not the smell of corn drying. That's hog. You know, there were just so many ways in which, as Jerry was saying, that climate change, the vertical integration of industry, immigration, labor, were just playing out in interconnected and deep and intimate ways. And when we saw that we were capturing that, I think that was the moment where we knew that we were onto something.
And I would even add, you know, that we were surprised, because Beth and I would be working. We had a 4-person crew, Beth and I, and a camera assistant and a sound mixer. So it was a very small, intimate crew. And we would work until 10 or 11 o'clock in the evening, and then we'd be downloading footage and reviewing what we'd be doing the next day. And so we'd give the crew the morning off, and Beth and I would go in early just to make sure, you know, we didn't miss anything. And as soon as we'd show up, the office was abuzz. It was busy, and there were things that were happening, you know, constantly. We were juggling at one point 3 or 4 stories at the same time, and we were grabbing, you know, wireless microphones off of Art and then taking it and putting it over on Dolores, and then getting it from Dolores and putting it on Tom, because we were simply two people, you know, trying to cover this, you know, these 3 or 4 different breaking stories that were happening on the spot. One was climate change which didn't make the film, which was about the zebra mussels. One was a dangerous corner that John was covering. And one was Emmanuel Trujillo story, which actually did end up making the final cut. So,
well, and you mentioned only being two people trying to cover all these stories. There are only 4 people and trying to cover all of those stories for the Times.
Exactly. Yeah.
But if I can just add, you know, I mean, we got lucky. They're an incredible family. It's a fascinating community. And then you have Art, who is just so articulate, and who is able actually to talk about the value of a local newspaper to its community, who is able to explain the ways in which the business model is broken when it comes to newspapers. So, you know, we really had all these pieces, and I'm not sure that we necessarily saw it clearly at the time. I think we knew that we had something, but just that we had all that to work with, it made for a very rich stew.
We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. I am talking with Jerry Recious and Beth Levis, and they are the filmmakers behind the new documentary Storm Lake, which follows the Storm Lake Times through about 2 years in the life as they engage with and report on the community of Storm Lake. We'll continue in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR comes from Hands in Harmony, a therapeutic healthcare facility with a splash of spa and a team of holistic healers to help in the quest for health, harmony, and happiness. Cedar Rapids and Mount Vernon. Classes, massage, and more at myhih.com.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the documentary Storm Lake, which follows the newspaper, the Storm Lake Times, through just about 2 years in the life. And as the hour goes on, we're going to broaden the conversation to talk about local journalism in Iowa, which is a very, very difficult business. With me right now are Jerry Recious and Beth Levison. They are the filmmakers behind this documentary, Storm Lake. And of course, the Storm Lake Times is a newspaper in Storm Lake run by the Cullen family. Art Cullen is the editor and co-owner of the paper and won the Pulitzer Prize in 2017. And just before the break, we were talking about the incredible work that this newspaper does covering the community, how hard they're working. And you also do a really beautiful job showing us how hard they work to stay solvent. And the financial trouble of the Storm Lake Times was not solved in any way by Art Cullen winning the Pulitzer Prize. In fact, in the documentary, you show us that actually hurt them financially as a paper, Beth?
So I can explain that. I mean, basically, well, what's so interesting about Storm Lake, we were speaking about it being a microcosm. So it is a blue dot in a purple county in a red state. And it is a blue dot in part because there are so many immigrants who live there. And so basically, when Art won the Pulitzer, because he was critical of production agriculture and big ag and of the ruling industry, a lot of folks stopped advertising, and they stopped reading the paper, and they stopped subscribing to the paper. And so this is what's so interesting, is that local newspapers can be local watchdogs for the community, but in doing their work, in doing the investigative work and the reportage, they put their own existences at risk. And perhaps there was a day when local newspapers had more subscribers and were more supported and had more ads, but you know, the margins are tight these days. So, you know, that was a blow to the Storm Lake Times, and probably an unexpected one. But it shows in some ways the way that doing a reporter's job can be dangerous for the paper.
Well, and it's interesting because, of course, there's a difference between the editorial page and the rest of the newspaper. And people who work in journalism understand that. I think fewer and fewer readers of newspapers seem to understand that. That tends to be really controversial and difficult these days. In the film, though, Jerry, there was one of the readers of the paper who I felt like he summed it up really well. He's like, oh, I don't agree with anything that they say on the editorial page, but I read the paper for the news, which is how it's supposed to work. Right?
Yeah, no, very interesting. We really wanted to include readers. You know, it was really a story, though, more about the work that the Cullens do. But we did want to get a sense of what the community was like and who the readers are. And so, you know, we followed a handful of people and we just got their opinions about what the newspapers are. And some loved them, some loved them, didn't agree with them, and some simply didn't care about them that much, but they still did get the newspaper to go to, I think, some of the hard news. You know, at one point, I think John, Art's older brother, the publisher, said, you know, the front page is the heart of the newspaper and the editorial is the soul. So, you know, if you disagree with the soul of what that opinion is, then you may not be interested in reading those columns.
Both of you have been traveling around Iowa with these film premieres. I know that Art Cullen has been doing a lot of appearances and talking with audiences as well. And Jerry, from your time being back in Iowa, engaging with the crowds who are coming to the film, tell me what you feel like people are taking away from this experience. What are you hearing from people?
Oh, it's been fantastic. I'd have to say it's really wonderful to engage. I think people as well have been shut up for, you know, the last year and a half or more with COVID. So people coming out and engaging in lively conversations, you know, that with their neighbors, you know, which is one of the things that we see as well. That Art is ruining kind of towards the end of the caucuses is that, you know, it's a shame that, you know, what's happening now with Iowa is that this is really a place where people and neighbors that may not agree can get together and have civil conversations. And I think, you know, people, you know, miss that. Certainly they're going out to the movies or they're trying to be as social as they feel comfortable with. But people, you know, in the audiences are really responding to the story, I think, in terms of what it's portraying. You know, what do you lose if you don't have a newspaper? What is your level of civic engagement, for example, in your own communities? And how engaged are you? Are you supporting your local newspaper? Are you a small business owner? Are you advertising in your local businesses or your local newspaper? So, you know, there's been a lot of topics that have come out through the course of these screenings, and they've all been engaging and they've all been, you know, a little bit soul searching. So I'm very pleased that, you know, we're bringing it, especially to Iowa, but all over the country eventually.
Yeah, I'll tell you both that as a journalist watching this, it was just incredibly inspiring and heartwarming, but it was also heartbreaking. As Art says in his letter to his son that you finish the film with, you know, as a local journalist, the hours are terrible, the pay is terrible, but you just might save the world. But it was... You know, as much as I agree with Art Cullen, and I believe that, it also left me feeling really concerned about the future of local journalism. How are you guys feeling after traveling around and seeing how people are responding to this? How do you feel about the future of local journalism, Beth?
I'm hopeful. I think the process of making this film really showed me the value of local news. And, you know, I was always a newspaper reader and I loved my local paper, the Berkshire Eagle in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, growing up. And every time I go to a new town, I like to look at the local newspaper. So I'm hopeful. And I know that there is a national effort and a grassroots effort to try to save local journalism. And I hope that we all just get it together and that readers and communities start to understand the crisis that local journalism is facing and that everybody does their part. And I think just a quick thing to add is, you know, so many newspapers are excellent and good at telling the stories of their own communities, but many newspapers fail at telling their own story and of the struggles that they're having. And so we're hoping that the film, you know, inspires people to rethink their relationship to local news. And we hope that the film even encourages other newspapers to tell their own stories to their communities, to their readers, that it fosters dialogue, you know, so that we can save this industry that's facing an existential crisis.
Well, thank you both for telling this story and for talking with me today.
Thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Jerry Recious and Beth Levison, co-directors of the documentary Storm Lake. You can stream it at home through the Varsity Theater in Des Moines through October 28th. It airs in Holstein October 22nd through the 25th, and it will air on Iowa PBS on November 15th. And here's just a moment from the film. Art Cullen reading part of the letter he wrote to his son Tom about being a journalist.
Dear Tom, when James Madison wrote the First Amendment to the Constitution, he had you in mind. The reporter is the cornerstone of an informed electorate and a functioning democracy. The best journalism is that which builds communities. You build your community by publicizing good deeds done.
Hey guys.
By urging yourself and those around you to do better.
What? How are you? Doing good?
And by making certain that your town's issues are heard in Des Moines and Washington. If you find writing is a chore after a while, you're in the wrong business. The pay is lousy and the hours can be terrible, but you can change the world through journalism. That's the only good reason to get into this trade. Because when you're looking for a friend, remember that the dog can't read. Love, you'd better check that out. Dad. P.S. Is that story done yet?
That's just a little bit of the film Storm Lake. And of course, that voice is the voice of Pulitzer Prize winner Art Cullen, editor and co-owner of the Storm Lake Times and author of Storm Lake, a chronicle of change, resilience, and hope from a Heartland newspaper. Art Cullen is on the line with me now. Hello, Art.
Hi, Charity.
Welcome back to the show. And I think one of the most stunning things for a lot of people when they watch the film Storm Lake is to discover that you won a Pulitzer Prize, you published a book, and now you've had a film made about you. And and it's still a struggle to make ends meet at the newspaper. Tell me a little bit more about what's going on with the bottom line at the Storm Lake Times.
Well, as the movie illustrates, you know, the newspaper industry was having a rough time before the pandemic. You know, there's a lot of big factors involved, the loss of classified advertising to Craigslist, you know, and Google searches basically eliminating our advertising franchise. And so, and then, you know, social media also stealing our originally produced news and then marketing it so they can sell their own advertising. And so it was a very difficult row to hoe, as we say in Iowa, before the pandemic. And then when the pandemic hit, basically the bottom fell out. And were it not for the payroll protection program, we very likely would have gone out of business. And since then, our business has recovered somewhat. We were able to break even this summer and make a few bucks in August. And so we have hope that that maybe we hit bottom. And we've been hoping that for 30 years.
I hope that's true. But it's so interesting that in this moment, of course, the pandemic made everything so difficult. But you illustrate just by what you've covered, and so many local newspapers all over the country and, in fact, all over the world have illustrated, that local journalism is actually life-saving in the space of this pandemic. I mean, it feels like the stakes have never been higher.
Yeah, and I think readers were responding to that. Also, you know, at the same time, we had this this crazy general election in November, and you know, where propaganda and spin are the order of the day, or lies. And I think people really turned to newspapers. The New York Times and Washington Post, for example, in 2020 saw pretty sizable increases in their digital circulation. And we saw some slight increases in circulation as readers sought real factual information, and, you know, about the pandemic, about politics, and about the elections. And, you know, I think people were realizing that you could count on the local newspaper or the local radio station, and certainly public radio, to report accurately and fairly. And I think people are starting to wake up again to the idea that if your news is free, somebody's paying for it, and it may not be who you think.
As I just mentioned a few minutes ago, you've been traveling around with the film. You're going to be in Holstein coming up here soon. And you've been talking with crowds. You've been answering questions. What do people want to talk about? What are you finding out from the people you're connecting with?
Well, I think people are interested in civic engagement. And I think that's a real theme, and you know, it's the main theme in the movie. And so people seem to be taken with that, and especially now, you know, I mean, we had a mob overrun the Capitol on January 6th, and that's not the kind of civic engagement we were looking for. And so I think, again, Americans are interested in, and Iowans are becoming more interested in how they can get involved in their communities and fix their little corner of the world when all these problems seem so huge, whether it's COVID or, you know, cynicism toward institutions and distrust of government and authorities. You know, maybe, you know, in your own little community, you can make a difference. And I think that's happening.
What do you want people to take away with them when they see the film? Because in spite of the fact that you won a Pulitzer and you've been around the block, there are still a lot of people who just aren't aware of what's going on in local news. What do you want them to take away with them?
Well, I think that, again, to me, the theme of the film, you know, Field of Dreams is a movie about baseball on the surface, but it's really about something more than that, obviously. And the same thing with this movie. It's, you know, on the surface, it's a movie about a newspaper, but it's really a movie about what each of our responsibilities are in a democracy. And the first one is to be informed with the facts. And that's what I hope people take away from it, is that facts are important. And then, of course, we arrive at opinions from those facts that we display on our editorial page. But our front page is where we're running the straight story, and we need that for a functioning democracy, because when people say that vaccines don't work, or they're going to give you cancer, or that Hillary Clinton was piloting a boat through the Suez Canal with children aboard, and, you know, all this is purported as true, you know, and we've got to get back to reality here, what the facts are. And And the facts are that vaccines work, and Hillary Clinton was never in a boat in the Suez Canal.
It also feels like you were talking about people maybe waking up to the need for news they can trust and the awareness that maybe they need to pay for that. And I hope that you are absolutely right about that. Do you feel like the attacks that we've had on our democracy are also helping people wake up to the fact that we have to protect democracy?
Well, I think they do, and I think the attacks are intensifying at the local level, where, you know, people won't speak to you in Storm Lake, Iowa, because, you know, you endorsed Joe Biden for president. So it's all getting out of hand, and it's now pervasive at the local level.
Yeah.
And you know, turning back to a straight version of reality is a healthy elixir for that.
Well, Art, thank you for doing your part to protect democracy and keep local news alive. Thank you so much for talking with me.
Well, thanks for having me, Charity.
Art Cullen, editor and co-owner of the Storm Lake Times, and of course one of the subjects of the new film, Storm Lake. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
At a time when information continues to come at us faster and faster, sometimes you need to hit pause and rewind. NPR's Throughline takes you back in time to the source of the news stories filling your feed. Find NPR's Throughline wherever you get your podcasts.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. We've been talking about the struggle to keep local news alive this hour, and balancing the books is far from the only threat to local newspapers. We are going to talk now about the Burlington Hawkeye. It bills itself as Iowa's oldest newspaper, established in 1837. It has a long, proud history of covering local news in Burlington and the surrounding area. But these days, it's a very different paper than it used to be. It is now owned and operated by Gannett. And the story of this newspaper, or at least one version of this story, is the subject of an article in The Atlantic. The article is called What We Lost When Gannett Came to Town, and the author of the article, Elaine Godfrey, is with me now. Hello, Elaine.
Hi, Charity. How's it going?
Good. Thank you so much for being here. And we know that local newspapers are in trouble. It is hard to make ends meet for a lot of local newspapers. And we also know that more than 1,800 papers have stopped publishing since 2004. But as I said, that's not the only threat. The bottom line is not the only threat. Your article is about a different threat, consolidation. Tell me a little bit about what you see as the climate with consolidation threatening these local papers.
That's right. So, I really had expected when I started writing this story about my local paper, the Hawkeye in Burlington, that I would find that it was purchased by a hedge fund because the paper was struggling. I thought that that was sort of the way that these things worked.
Right, that's the narrative that makes sense there.
Yeah, exactly. And that is not the case here. As I found from talking with the publisher of the Hawkeye from 2016 when it was bought, it was very profitable. Actually, the Hawkeye had pretty high profit margins for a newspaper, and newspaper profit margins were already pretty good, actually, as an industry, much higher than retail stores, grocery stores, that kind of thing. So what I found is that what happens is these companies, in this case, it was Gatehouse, which was a company owned by a private equity firm. They came in, they bought the paper. They said, don't worry, we won't change anything. We're not going to do anything to your paper. It's going to be great. And that did not play out. They ended up sort of encouraging people to take buyouts, laying a lot of different people off, consolidating the design team, moving the print team to Peoria, which is 3 hours away from Burlington in Illinois. And they came in and did this. And so in 2016, the paper had about 100 employees. Now the Hawkeye is down to about a dozen, including just three news reporters, which is such a huge change from, you know, 2016. And when I was a kid in the early 2000s, I mean, the paper was still thriving. Sure, it was suffering from some of these things that Art Cullen mentioned, loss of classified ads, rise of social media, that kind of thing. But again, it was still profitable. So that was sort of the sad thing that I learned in reporting this piece. And it's happening all over the country.
So take us back in time. You actually start the article before your time of reading the paper with what for a lot of people who worked at the newspaper was really a pinnacle moment. It was a difficult moment in Burlington, but you start your article with a day that a grain elevator exploded in 1987. Tell me about how the paper responded to that.
Yeah, I start the article that way because I think it's important to show what a paper did back then, what a paper was to a community, and who reporters were to a community. So the grain elevator exploded in April of 1987. My parents lived in Burlington at the time. I had heard their own, you know, stories and impressions of what that moment was like. And I talked to Dale Allison, who then was the city editor of the paper. It was actually his first day. He was only 30-something. And he immediately, you know, the explosion happened just a few hundred yards from where the newspaper's offices were. So it was also like extremely personal to them. He immediately sent reporters out everywhere, hospital, fire department, right to the scene. They all ended up regrouping at like a dive bar downtown because the explosion was threatening to like set off some train cars packed with ammonia. It was just this sort of very harrowing experience for everyone involved. And they made it. I mean, they published a story with several different articles about the explosion, aerial photos of what it looked like. And it was only a couple hours late that night. It was an evening paper back then. And all the people I talked to who were there, these veteran reporters, are still so proud they were able to cover this and not be too much past the deadline. And I think that's so impressive. And that's what local news did. They covered these local disasters with the kind of, you know, importance and gave them the significance that they really deserved and that they had to the people in this area.
So contrast that all hands on deck covering what's important in the community. And of course, in addition to big stories, you know, all the little stories were being covered as well. The kinds of things that, you know, it feels like it's a letter from home or it just keeps you engaged in what's mm-hmm. going on in your community. Contrast that with what you see in the Hawkeye today.
Yeah. And so I think what's important to know is that the Hawkeye would still today cover an explosion like that, of course. They would cover the big stories. They would cover a murder or, you know, some stuff like that, the big stuff. But with only a handful of reporters, they simply cannot cover it with the same level of thoroughness. And also they can't get to these smaller stories about, you know, I mentioned in the story, my Girl Scout troop in high school. I was a Girl Scout for a very long time. My Girl Scout troop in high school got a half page spread by a reporter. You know, we had people writing about the Teddy Bear Picnic and Denmark Heritage Days and Snake Alley Art Fair, Steamboat Days, all these small things that just cannot, by definition, but by having only three reporters, get covered. And I think that stuff is really, really important. And you don't really know it. At least I didn't know it growing up. I didn't know how important those small stories were. And also, I think I had grown up reading people writing letters to the editor and writing editorials and opinion columns in the Hawkeye about local stuff, about local disagreements. Who can use the library? You know, what jurisdiction is so-and-so in? What are these local ordinances good for? How should we design the new swimming pool? Things like that. And those are really hard to come by now. The local coverage, the local arguments, they are slimmer and slimmer and slimmer.
I mentioned already that 1,800 papers have stopped publishing since 2004. And so, you know, you're telling me that the Burlington Hawkeye was actually doing quite well when it was bought by this hedge fund. And then later that purchase morphed into them being owned by Gannett. There are people who say without Gannett, without these larger corporations, we would lose even more local papers. What is your feeling about that?
And that's this hard thing. I think we have seen successful models of newspaper ownership in family-run papers. The Cedar Rapids Gazette, at least as far as I know, is still family-run. Seattle Times is family-run. You know, there's so many models to look at as far as families who are willing to make a small profit and run a newspaper and not, you know, have it be a huge cash cow for them. I don't see Gannett or Alden Capital owning newspapers as a good thing, really. I think it's difficult because I think that the journalists working at these papers are doing great work. I think that they're doing the best they can to, you know, in the Hawkeyes case, prop up and fill with good content these historic newspapers. I mean, the oldest newspaper in Iowa has 3 news reporters, and they are doing the best they can to keep up that reputation. But they can't. I mean, it's an impossible task. I think it's probably true that more of these local newspapers would be gone. But I think they're going to be gone anyway. They're on their way out. And I think that that's something that I wish more people were paying attention to. That's part of the reason I wrote this story. I think people aren't really aware of the decline of local news, and especially why it's happening and what it means for them personally.
And I want to mention that the Cedar Rapids Gazette is employee owned, not family owned, just a minor distinction there, but yeah. But still independent.
And yes.
When you decided to tell this story, you talked to a lot of people who used to work at the Hawkeye, but you had a hard time getting access to anybody who works at the Hawkeye now. Tell me about that.
So I talked to a couple people who work at the Hawkeye. I talked to one news reporter who worked at the Hawkeye, but Gannett would not let me talk to this person without them being present on the interview, which is not something I usually – the reporters usually like. You don't want – people to feel pressured to say certain things or not say certain things. I didn't end up including that interview. I felt like it wasn't really a genuine conversation that we had with the public relations official from Gannett on the line with us. So no, I mean, they are a secretive, I would say, company, Gannett is. And you know, they wouldn't let me in the offices. They were very worried, frankly, about how this story was going to make them look. They told me they were very tired of all this negative press. And so I think that, and I haven't really heard from them at all in the wake of this story. I think there's not much they can say here. I think that it's right. I think that they just sort of have to wrestle with this as you know, defend what they're doing. And figure that out on their own. I don't know. They did not make it easy, no, to write this story, but we managed to get it done.
Talking with former employees of the Hawkeye, what did they tell you? How are they feeling?
They're sad. I mean, man, I talked to so many veterans of the Hawkeye. So many of them are not included in this article. I just had so much reporting from them. They're devastated. This was a newspaper that, you know, a lot of them started their careers at or spent decades at. They love Burlington. They love Southeast Iowa and Western Illinois. This was their turf. People forget that local newspapers, they employ residents of the town, right? I mean, people who worked in printing and design, reporters, editors, they lived in Burlington and the surrounding area. You knew them. You could run into them in the grocery aisles and say, "Hey, I did not like your column." You could do that, and they welcomed it. And they're devastated that this is happening. I talked to a lot of them about this sort of question that they're having now of, do they keep subscribing? Some of them have stopped reading the paper. It makes them too sad to see it as a sort of shell of its former self. Some of them still subscribe because they can't bring themselves not to.
Right. It's still the local paper.
Exactly. It's still the local paper. And I think, yeah, I think they don't know what to do. I think so many of them were asking me, what should we do? What happens to local news? And I thought, you know, I wish I knew. I wish I knew the answer.
Not every local newspaper is a good newspaper. I think we need to acknowledge that there. There have been a lot of people trying to come up with ways, as newspapers have closed and laid off people, coming up with ways to try to cover local news in a way where they can make money and, you know, disseminate the information that the people want. We've seen hyper local websites pop up and things like that. What do you see that might be working?
Yeah. So there are independent outlets starting all over the country. By many of them are former newspaper or local radio or local TV reporters themselves. So Burlington has one, the Burlington Beacon, started by Jeff Abel. And he, these are small sort of scrappy upstarts that aren't making any money right now, or they're bringing in money, but they're not making a profit and they can't really pay their reporters yet. That is a very common thing, that they're starting, but they're not quite sustainable. I think that where this model could work best, and from my conversations with people who study this, it can work in growing metro areas, in areas where educated residents, wealthy residents can not necessarily wealthy, but people who have money can support these independent efforts or offer financial backing. I think it is a harder prospect to have an independent newspaper in a town like Burlington, which is not growing and is not particularly wealthy. There's not a ton of possible backers there. But I think there are also some nonprofit outlets that are promising. Iowa Capital Dispatch is a good one, an independent news source. It's sort of a syndication service that offers community newspapers free content about the State House, which I think is a really cool thing. There's also a nonprofit out there, the Western Iowa Journalism Foundation, where family-owned papers are raising money to help their papers survive. I think that these are all good things. I would say, you know, if you're looking to help solve this problem, subscribe to independent outlets near you. Really do your research. Find out who's trying to solve the problem in your area, because chances are someone's there trying to do it.
When you look at the future, do you think that nonprofit news is going to be the way of the future?
I don't know. I think there will have to be it'll have to be some sort of combination, some sort of nonprofit. I mean, I think that the Local News Act in the House right now could be really useful. It's legislation that's setting up a committee to investigate, creating a national endowment for local papers, local journalism in general, not just papers, or maybe reforming the Center for Public Broadcasting to prop up local journalism. I think it's going to have to be some sort of hybrid model. But again, I think everything should be tested out, because as we've seen and as I've written about, it's the decline of local news is so important and so detrimental, and we need to find a way to fix it.
Elaine Godfrey, thank you so much for talking with me.
Thanks, Charity.
Elaine Godfrey is the author of the article, What We Lost When Gannett Came to Town. It's the story of the Burlington Hawkeye in The Atlantic. This is Talk of Iowa. I'm Charity Nebbie.